How can one become relieved of the undue attachment to family life? Family life being an emblem or symptom of bodily identification. One doesn't have to be in bodily identification even to be in family life. Someone was asking, if there's no material attraction in the spiritual world, there's only Krishna attraction or Narayana attraction, are the marriages in Vaikuntha and Goloka? The answer is yes. There it's different. There it's not according to guna and karma. It's according to a particular spiritual mode of wishing to serve Krishna in this way, that way. And this is a perverted reflection of that. So here we are, managing our circumstance according to the codes of Dharma, recognizing where in our trajectory towards Krishna are we and what suited position to act from. These very strong terminologies being used about the suffering position variously of the living entity as he journeys from birth to death. Said it before, it's not a scare tactic, it's just reality. And with it comes bondage, not only in this life, but then we're going to hear the next life. Giving up this body, that which we're so attached to, it's a fearful condition. Living entities are afraid. Some people can say, I'm not afraid. By and large, people are afraid because that's their identity. I and mine. It's yanked away. It can go slowly, medium, or really fast. Fear of death. Bayam dutriyam abhinivesh yataksyat. Nice verse. Fear arises. Bayam syat. Fear arises when one is dutriya abhiniveshita. When one becomes absorbed in things that are seen as separate from their source, Krishna. Fear, because you're going to lose it. It doesn't belong to you. It's not your object for enjoyment. This body, or the object connected with the body, family, home, wealth. Fear. Sooner or later, or throughout, if one is introspective, there's no shelter. There's no position of stability. There's no position of real happiness. It's an illusory. So sense of happiness, since this is all being detailed. And now we're going to hear, at the final stage, it's all taken away. That's called death. And then the next journey onwards is birth. It's exactly completing where this chapter begins, from chapter 30 is the living entity attached to fruit of activities. A capsule of this is 2+ chapters. A capsule of the same message is, again, this is Canto 3, it's in Canto 7, where Prahlad speaks to his classmates in a kind of a summary capsule way of, at every stage of life, people will say, there's no time, because there's a distraction by the circumstances that material nature provides. This is what Maya does. It keeps us away because of our inimical attitude toward Krishna, keeps us away from Krishna. It keeps us so busy, so preoccupied. When we invite people to take a book, or come to the temple, or come to our Bhakti Bhiksha gathering or something, they'll say, I don't have time. It's directly described in Ishopanishad. This is the way of material nature. It's true they don't have time, because material nature keeps them so busy they don't have time. They don't have time for self-realization. They have time for fruitive activities only. No time. There must be time. And there is time. It's just as simple as deflecting attention toward Krishna. There is time. Time works differently for those that turn their attention to Krishna than those that turn their attention away from Krishna. Time acts differently. The internal energy acts differently than the external energy. Just like living entities that are in the lower rungs of species of life, their whole life cycle can be 24, 48 hours. So they take birth, their body grows, making a joke of it, they go to school. They get a job. They get married. They have kids. And they get old. Their body starts to become feeble. Some predator gets them, or they just expire in 24, 48 hours. The time is a whole life cycle. So go a little bit higher, and it's a little expanded. Human form of life, let's say, just in age of Kali, 100 years, in the heavenly planets, it's such a longer period of time. Brahmaloka, such a longer period of time. But time is acting to destroy things. It's just the cycle of time works differently according to the consciousness specific to the source of everything. Consciousness, attention going to the source of everything, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. So when there's distraction or attention goes elsewhere, then there's this force of time. It's very explicitly, verse after verse, spoken at the end of chapter 29, when one doesn't take to devotional service, time acts to move you along, that this cycle, depending upon your consciousness, guna and karma, consciousness. If one neglects the source of everything, the connection between the soul and the Supreme Soul, the source of everything, ashraya, in the language of the Bhagavatam, the shelter of shelters, swa ashraya, or swa ashraya shraya. Jiva Goswami speaks like that. He's the shelter of those who give shelter to others who receive shelter. He's the shelter, he's the source of everything. To the degree that our attention goes away from there to that Supreme, in the mood of trying to serve the Supreme, then we're implicated in this journey of fruitive activity. So that's, it's impetus, it's not scare tactic. It's impetus to take proper shelter, because there's consequences if we don't. Say, no, mythology. How do you know? I'm not convinced. I'm happy. And so forth. Text 44. In this way, the living entity gets a suitable body with a material mind and senses according to his fruitive activities. Anugha is the Sanskrit. Suitable. Perfectly suitable. Perfectly custom-made to suit their guna and karma. When the reaction of his particular activity comes to an end, that end is called death. And when a particular type of reaction begins, that beginning is called birth. Just a note, in the Sanskrit, one of the terms is nirodha. Nirodha means destruction. In the Bhagavatam, there's 10 topics. It's Mahapuranas have 10 topics, and one of them is devastation. So this term nirodha, depending upon the cycle of time that one moves in, it can mean the total annihilation. Again, Jiva Goswami. It can mean the total annihilation after creation, maintenance for some time, and destruction. This is one of the 10 topics. But there's smaller cycles. There's the partial destruction that comes at the end of the day of Brahma. There's another that comes at the end of each Manu, of 14 in number within the day of Brahma. Here the term is being used at the end of this body, in the human form of life. That's another nirodha. Destruction. But in those cycles of time, it's the soul isn't destroyed. The particular packaging of that soul in a particular life form is destroyed, and then they get a new one. And we celebrate, oh, happy birthday. And when the body, that cycle is destroyed, oh, grieving for the loss of the body of a loved one. It's not coldness, it's just reality of looking at the bigger picture of how the movements of time carry the living entity from one situation to another, unless eternal time acts, unless the internal potency acts, unless that connection with the Supreme is activated. It's an option on the menu list, especially if there's association of devotees that can assist one along the path of devotional service. But if you don't choose that option, here's the default mode. purport. From time immemorial, the living entity travels in the different species of life and the different planets almost perpetually. You heard not only different planets, but different universes. There's lots of choices of where the souls that leave this body can go. This process is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Brahmayan sarvabhutani yantra rodhani mayaya : Under the spell of maya, everyone is wandering throughout the universe on the carriage of the body offered by the material energy. Materialistic life involves a series of actions and reactions. It is a long film spool, because that was before there was digital movies. He's speaking of the other kind, physical embedding images in sequence on a spool of film, and you run the spool through a machine and light, and it projects onto the silver screen. So that technology is what he's referring to. It is a long film spool of actions and reactions. Just turn the volume up.
It's off.
Huh? It's not off. It's on. It's on. It's on. The button is on. But it's not recognizing. So what's the deal? It is a long film spool of actions and reactions. And one lifespan is just a flash in such a reactionary show. When a child is born, it is to be understood that his particular type of body is the beginning of another set of activities. And when an old man dies, it is to be understood that one set of reactionary activities is finished. I mean, it's analytical. Maybe seemingly coldly analytical, but it's analytical. A lifetime is brought about by reactions to previous activities. So the duration of life is burning, relieving that soul of a certain stockpile of karmic reactions. And then death marks the end of that. But during that lifetime, some additional activities and some additional bondage, and it's not even limited to one lifetime. You get all the karma from the previous lifetime in the next lifetime. There's many, many lifetimes. Karma, the karma clock, the time triggering or activating karma can work over multiple lifetimes. It may be instant karma, says time again. Instant, delayed, during this lifetime, in the next lifetime, multiple lifetimes. There's a nice chart of showing that, you know, time moves in cycles. And according to the feature of time, it activates something that's stored, an impression, a sanskara that's stored. And it can be activated, the circle of time can work over a short span or medium span or long span or really long span. We don't necessarily, well, most likely we don't know what's the cause of a certain result. What prompted good fortune, ill fortune, or mix? Too complicated. We don't know. But we can know that it's triggered by some previous activity combined with time, and time activates it. And time is an energy of the Supreme Will. We're under his control. You can say, I'm Declaration of Independence. I'm independent. It's nonsense. We're not independent. We're dependent. Literally at every moment, not even figuratively, literally, time is moving. And we can say whatever we want to say. Time moves. Time moves matter. And we're involved in matter, and so we're moving with time. That one of the terms in the verse is Prabhupada is referring to the Bhagavad Gita verse. Brahmayan sarvabhutani yantra rudhani mayaya. Yantra means a machine. So not only the body is a machine, so as the body moves, we're sitting here, we get up and walk across the room. It's just the body moving. But the soul is the passenger in the body. Just like you're in your car. You're sitting there, zooming along at 60 miles an hour. You're sitting there. The machine is moving at 60 miles an hour, so you're moving at 60 miles an hour, although you're stationary. You're immovable. This is the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Immovable. But you're moving. But it's not only the body, the gross body, it's the mind. The movements of the mind. If we identify the self to be the mind, which we usually do, then when the mind goes, we go there. And then I feel happy or I feel sad. Or I feel confused. Or I feel whatever the feeling is, that's me. Just a machine. Complicated machine, because although it's in principle it's simple, like a computer, or the other way around, computers are like minds. The mind is a binary processor, and computer's a binary processor. Learn a lot about binary processors, and you can make, very, very, very sophisticated computers. But it's just, one and a zero. And the mind is like that too. It's just a machine. And if we direct the mind properly, it can be our best friend. If we don't direct the mind properly, it can be our greatest enemy. We'll never see the light of day. We'll always be in that happy, sad, perplexed, mixed delusion, place of darkness. And the birth cycle of birth and death continuing. It doesn't have to be like that, but it's commonly like that. Going back to chapter 25, the response that Kapila Dev gives to Devahuti is the way that you can become relieved from undue attachment to family life is by association with sadhu. The whole chapter is built around that message, and the subsequent chapters are built around that message, just expanding on the message. If one doesn't have sadhu sangha, this is the default mode. Even if one has sadhu sangha, if one doesn't properly accept it, then one will continue in the default mode. And there's consequences of that. It's not a threat. It's just the way it is. It's reality. Implication in matter. Yantra rudhani mayaya. And then the machine, just like a car, the machine lasts for a certain period of time. It's designed in such a way, but it also, material nature helps it along, it'll break down. Not eternal. You can, maintain the car carefully, and it can last for a long time, but it's eventually going to expire, and you have to get another one. Body's the same. New chapter. Another birth. The chapter ends, death. New chapter, another birth. Paragraph. We can see that because of different reactionary activities, one man is born in a rich family and another is born in a poor family, although both of them are born in the same place. at the same moment and in the same atmosphere. One who is carrying pious activity with him is given a chance to take his birth in a rich and or pious family, and one who is carrying impious activity is given a chance to take birth in a lower, poor family. The change of body means a change to a different field of activities. That's Bhagavad Gita language. Kshetra and Kshetra Gya. Field of activities and the knower of the field of activities. Similarly, when the body of the boy changes into that of a youth, the boyish activities change into youthful activities. It's a machine. And the passenger is conscious. If the passenger identifies with the machine, then even more so, the proclivities of that particular stage of embodiment or category of species of embodiment, etc. will have a stronger influence. We discussed this yesterday, that the term in Sanskrit is upadhi, designation. And these are designations that limit. They direct. They control the living entity because of identification with the upadhi, the covering. You don't have to. We can transform consciousness to spiritual consciousness. And then, although we have a body that goes through its changes, nirodha, coming to, leaving something, going to the next something, we don't have to identify with. We just stay engaged in service that's appropriate for that circumstance. Devotion to Krishna is being nourished, and that's who we identify ourselves as. That consciousness is awakened by hearing and chanting Bhagavad Dharma, which is what we're doing right now. Awakening that consciousness by hearing and chanting the message of Bhagavatam, message of Bhagavan. Final paragraph. It is clear that a particular body is given to the living entity for a particular type of activity. This process is going on perpetually from a time which is impossible to trace out. Vaishnava poets say, therefore, anadi karma phale, Bengali, which means that these actions and reactions of one's activity cannot be traced, for they may even continue from the last millennium of Brahma's birth to the next millennium. We have seen the example in the life of Narada Muni. In one millennium, he was the son of a maidservant, and the next millennium, he became a great sage. So our Narada Muni describes to Vyas his previous life, that of a son of a maidservant, Shudra, by birth, and how he became perfected during that lifetime, achieved a spiritual body, and that was during a previous life of Brahma, not a previous day, previous life of Brahma. So wound back up within the body of Mahavishnu because there was some service for him, and then took birth as directly one of the sons of Lord Brahma, serving the disciplic succession from Krishna to Brahma to Narada in a spiritual body, serving the Supreme Lord's interest. And he's very happy to be in that service. Even he's in the material world, he has no affinity for the material world, he just has affinity for service. That's, so in his case, karma is zero. In our case, karma may be, you know, something more than zero. And our taking birth is not by the direct will of the Supreme Lord to engage in some service for Him, but just under the dictation of guna and karma moved by time. Fascinating. You know, from Bhagavad Gita, I'll just end with this. In Bhagavad Gita, there's five topics. You know that from the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. It follows that the model of Baladev Vidyabhusan, who Prabhupada dedicates this, his Bhagavad Gita commentary to, following Baladev Vidyabhusan, he says in his Bhagavad Gita commentary, and it's consistent throughout, that there's five topics. We just, you know, just covered them. There's the living entity and there's God, Jiva and Ishvara. And then there's time, and then there's karma, activities, and there's guna, the modes of nature, or prakriti, which is moved by the modes of nature. There's the five topics. Now you have life. Bhagavatam is accepting the same model, just expanding on the model in detail, according to the model, seeing Shastra Chakshusa, seeing through scripture, Jnana Chakshusa, seeing through knowledge. And when there's knowledge, it removes ignorance. And when ignorance is removed, suffering is removed. Because the ignorance is the root cause of suffering. But the root of ignorance is ignoring Krishna. So the root of knowledge is to turn attention to Krishna. And that's what the Bhagavatam does. Not how to become a better enjoyer and do pious activities and go to the better enjoyment place, Swarga. That's not... That is an option. The purpose of providing that option is because it's part of the picture of reality and some people want that. So it provides that it's incomplete knowledge. It's true. It's effective, but it's not complete knowledge. It's not the message of the Bhagavatam. It's not the complete message of the Bhagavatam. Or, excuse me, the Vedas. That was Vyasa's despondency. After he compiled all the Vedas in a written form, he was feeling despondent. And he wanted to know, why am I feeling this feeling of despondency? And Narada said, well, you described fruitive activities by the process of sacrifice, according to the teachings of the Vedas, which come from the Supreme Lord, so certainly it's right, not wrong. It's true. But you haven't given sufficient emphasis to the purpose behind those activities, to elevate the position of the soul, not just so they can have a better grade of enjoyment. Narada says specifically, living entities, they already have very strong tendency for fruitive activities, and you basically endorsed it. Vyasa says it's okay. Let's go. Fruitive activities. And this way, missing the real purpose of life, or the purpose of the Vedas. So what's the real purpose of the Vedas? To connect with the personality of Godhead. So do that. Write one literature that's just that. So the declaration at the very beginning, verse 2 of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, is this book will not speak about that. If you're interested in that, don't bother reading further, because we're not going to talk about that at all. Dharma Protita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam Paradharma, that's our topic. This other dharma, it's not in this text. So even when it speaks about performance of duty and so forth, it's performance of duty for the pursuance of connection with the Supreme. That's Bhagavad Dharma. That's Bhagavad Purana. That's our Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the nourishment that we're getting by hearing it. Clarity. And how to live our lives in such a way that We're acknowledging the machine, body and mind, and material intelligence and false ego. We're acknowledging them. Understanding how to utilize the machine to carry us to Krishna. And the starting point is this hearing and chanting method. Didn't get very far, just covered one verse. Is there any discussion on the message here?
Breaking from this cycle of beginning and ending of the life, the sadhu sangha is the method that is prescribed, and the way time acts when we are associating with sadhu is different from the way time is acting when sadhu is not present. So when you are here, it's transcendental, everything, you know, going well, but you know when association is not there, then sometimes we feeling falling into the modes of nature. What's the way to sustain the same mode?
Could you hear the question? No. The way out of the cycle of birth and death, or undue affinity for matter, is sadhu sangha. That's Kapila's answer to Devahuti in principle. When we have the opportunity for sadhu sangha, we feel lifted. And after some passage of time, that same physical presence of sadhu sangha is no longer there, and we may become affected by the modes of nature. What to do about that? Prabhupada's answer is very simple, and it works. There are two types of association. One is physical, and the other is vibrational. Physical is vapu, and vibration is vani. So, when there's physical association, there's practical activity that can be done in terms of the body, meaning, you know, opening the door, or cooking the meal, or washing the clothes, or making the place clean, or, you know, use your indriyas, use your senses for practical activity, for the body, in relation to the body. But when that is there, there's also vani, there's some message that's heard. Prabhupada's explanation. And my thoughts are going to a morning walk conversation with Srila Prabhupada that I attended. We're just outside the gate of Krishna Balar Mandir, and he stopped and started saying what I'm just saying. So it's nice, as I'm speaking this, I'm thinking of hearing from Prabhupada on this very topic. He said, of the two, vani is more important. When there's opportunity for vapu, for physical association, one should take that opportunity. But when that opportunity is there, more important than the physical is the vibrational. And if the physical is not there, vibrational. And by the careful and proper utilization of the material energy's technology, we have so many facilities for vibrational association, starting with Prabhupada's books and the recordings of Prabhupada's lectures and his recordings of his morning walks and room conversations, and that's vibrational. Then it's when it's transcribed into a written form, this is also vibrational. We can associate that when we hear and discuss, just like, you know, you do in Bhakti Vriksha groups. You're associating with the message, with the vani of our founder Acharya. And that way you're associating with sadhu. Because the message of the sadhu and the sadhu are different. The message of Krishna and Krishna are not different. So that's how we can maintain, through sound vibration. Just like this little, for example, this little, just three words, anadi karma pale. Now, for those of you that are not aware of our Vaishnav songs, it doesn't mean anything to you, especially. But those that are, have spent some time hearing Vani, is the words of our great acharyas who have written songs that we can sing and then absorb ourselves in those songs. You're associating with the person that wrote the song. And the mood and the message of that person, it's Vani Sangha. That's how. And if we take it seriously, not mechanically, but seriously and sincerely and devotionally, one will feel the presence of that great personality in that moment. And so if we extend the moments through regular nityam bhagavata sevaya, then we're associating with the person bhagavat as well as the book bhagavat. That's how it's done. Without physical association, that's how it's done. The potency is there for that Sangha. But take it the other way. Just say, supposing somebody is distracted. Sometimes happens, devotees are distracted, even when doing devotional activity. Supposing there's a pujari that's on the altar, initiated Brahmana pujari, and he's ringing the bell and offering the incense, and his mind is elsewhere. You know, in a lusty thought, or a greedy thought, or an angry thought, or a, you know, one of those gateways to hell thoughts. The indriyas can be engaged, but if the mind is out to lunch, then the activity isn't, you know, even there in direct sangha of the deity form of the Lord, they can be in abject maya. One can be in association of sadhu and be in abject maya. Potency is there, scripturally understood and by practical experience understood, provided we do this little thing of directing the mind properly to that physical presence of the deity or physical presence of the sadhu or the presence of the holy name, presence of the book and its message. That's a free will choice. And it may be, you know, contaminated by our past material contact. Still, then we try to bring the mind to the right position. The ability to do that starts with how we chant our japa and how we engage with the holy name with proper regard, for the holy name is Krishna. And I want to be with Krishna. Not distracted. I want to be with Krishna, fully attentive to Krishna. I want to be in my relationship with Krishna. That's the best opportunity for that practice of keeping the mind where it should be. If we don't, then we won't advance. Even when sadhu is, sangha is available, they won't advance adequately, you know, according to what the opportunity that's being provided us. And then, you know, back to your question, conversely, the opportunity to have sadhu sangha, even if there isn't physical association, will be greater or lesser depending upon how are we operating with the right understanding and principle of what it is that we're doing and availing ourselves to the benefit of what's being provided, the mercy that's being made available. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the lecture. If someone's previous life activities, if he takes a birth in an aristocrat family or some family where he wants to continue to perform his devotional service or activities, but as you said yesterday, his consciousness is covered. So that means, is there a chance to him continue from where he left off, or is there a chance he can fall down, or how it works from there?
Okay. How it works is, Krishna makes an arrangement in the next life of someone that did not complete whatever the position of birth is, but they have done something in their previous life, devotional service-wise, and they take birth. And Krishna will make an arrangement for that person to have sadhu-sangha. They'll have the opportunity to continue where they left off. They don't have to say yes. They can say no. But the opportunity is provided. And if they say yes, very quickly they rise to where they left off. Have you noticed that some people, when they have association of devotees, in the initial stages they seem to make this amazing rapid advancement, and then they kind of hit a plateau? That's what's going on. You're asking, how does it work? They're just continuing where they left off. Now they have a lot more work to do to go, further. And some persons, they engage in, they get brought in contact with devotional service, and their progress doesn't seem to be equal initially. But that, if that person is very, so that they're just continuing where they left off. There's just an asset that carries forward with them. But then the person that hasn't made so much advancement in previous life can make rapid advancement and easily surpass the one that in the previous life had engaged much more or had, progressed further in the path. It can easily grow as rapidly as how well we apply ourselves to the process, and Krishna will reciprocate with that. It's in Krishna's hand. It's not mechanical. So it'll continue. But another option is one can say no. Here is sadhu sangha, and I say no. The option is there. Or maybe. Which is kind of like no. But Krishna doesn't stop being kind, he'll continue. Yes?
Taking birth in one family is maybe they have all collective karma, and if for myself being a parent, when I'm taking care of the children and when I see the struggles that they're going through, I'm trying to help, I feel that that there is nothing that they're able to receive, if at all they're seeing something is picked on or
this sounds like the same question you asked yesterday. And it's similar, that same.
Yeah, it is for myself I'm asking, because I feel that I'm trying, being straightforward and maybe trying to address that this is what you are going through, so and trying to give a help. But I don't know how that might be be a harsh way of, no, because it's not the way that, if at all I might see in others, I might be, I don't know how I address them in a gentle way or something, but by being familiarity in the, with the family members, I might be saying that strife. I don't have any other intention, bad intention or just, hurting other, but it might be coming in a straightforward way. So I don't know how to deal with this.
Parenting is an endless topic. My experience. There's your emotion, which is what you're speaking about primarily. And there's also the perception of where's this well-intentioned parent coming from? Are they interested in me and my freedom of choice? Are they interested in, you know, remotely managing my life, vicariously wishing that the child of my parent, they envision that the enactment of my parents' wishes vicariously through me. Anyway, it's relational. And at the end of the day, the individual's choice in their relationship with Krishna is what the issue is, and it's in their hands. Whether it's your children or not your children, someone other than your children that you're interacting with. You may have particular care and concern for children, but you may have special care and concern for someone else. The principle is the same. The application of the principle is different, but the principle is the same. You care, and so what do? You express your care. Now, how do you express that care? It depends upon time, place, circumstance. The most important thing is your own Krishna consciousness. And then allowing the other individuals going to make some choices. So you offer wisdom and you also offer freedom, just as Krishna does with us. How does Krishna feel? He's the father of all living entities. How does he feel? We can adopt that position, you know, the representative of Krishna position. Krishna cares. He allows freedom of choice. He gives abundant advice. And as he did with Arjuna, now consider carefully and do what you feel you must do. And if we're not, my recommendation in parenting or in life is look inward. If I'm not being so effective with my children or others, it has to do with my lack of Krishna consciousness, my lack of purity. Same thing another way. If Prabhupada was the parent, and in this circumstance, would it be different? Yes. So let me become more Prabhupada-like. Now, even in Prabhupada's life, his children did not become pure devotees. in the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. His children did not all become pure devotees. In the life of Advaitacharya, his children did not all become pure devotees. Some of them became deviants, asara, useless. Advaitacharya. So now let's come back to you. The main thing that you can work on is your own purity and your own Krishna consciousness. And the phrase that I like to use is detached caring. Krishna conscious caring. Like Prahlad Maharaj, like we discussed yesterday evening, his detached caring. He felt for all living entities who are struggling. So you feel for your children who are struggling, and you can understand what would relieve them of that struggling. And you're offering your advice. They have some free will. They may need to go through some stuff, and you know, can to a limited degree only access the good advice you're giving, just as we do with the advice that Krishna's giving. You just continue to extend. Not stop caring, but detached caring. You allow the destiny of those living entities who you care about. What do you think?
There's a lot of opportunities there for, you know, it's so wonderful that everything is practiced at home and everybody association is there, everything is there. But how not able to take it and grow beyond that?
And you're speaking of you or you're speaking of your children? I'm speaking of you. That's something that's within your sphere of influence, is your own Krishna consciousness. There's a sphere of your concern, and there's a sphere of your influence. You focus on that. The purity of your own heart. Focus there. Then you'll be a better instrument. And whatever good you can extend to others will expand because of the purity of heart. It's Bhakti Siddhanta. I mean, it's our core teaching. Something else? Yes? Parenting, okay.
One question that I often have is, am I not doing enough for the children to get more advanced, or it's just that...
Well, what is it? What is enough? Is enough like a line that you draw in the sand and, okay, that's enough? It's never enough.
So, they are not...
Same question. Different way of saying the same question. You can give more if you're more Krishna conscious within the same amount of time and effort that you're expending. It's never enough. And that's it's not dichotomy. The tension, there's a term that one has to live with as a devotee. I'm trying my best and it's never enough. That's good. Then you continue to try to do better. And the better capacity is from purity. So look to purity. It's never enough. Yes? Continuing on with the parenting question. No, go, okay. Okay.
while we are in this Krishna conscious and we are like focusing or practicing all the good qualities, so we don't want to hurt others, we want to be good, we want to focus on Krishna, we want to do all good.
Yes.
So while we are in the process, we still have to do our regular needs, like we are in our basic food, shelter, and so we need to today's world, even to achieve the smallest or have the minimalistic lifestyle, you still have to deal with a lot of people who are engrossed in material needs, and you are exposed to this damage and from outside. How do we protect our, like Krishna, in how he says in Bhagavad Gita, we have to stand up and fight for it, or do we have to continue to focus on Lord Krishna?
Well, the principle is presented in Bhagavad Gita. It's not either or, it's both. You carry out your prescribed duty and always think of Krishna. So the protection from contamination is the always thinking of Krishna part. And that you carry out your duties, prescribed duties, according to the codes of theistic conduct. You're protected by dharma if you abide by dharma. Dharma rakshata rakshataha. One who protects dharma is protected by dharma. It's a nice relationship, a dharma relationship. So we can be in contaminating association and be protected by these two things, abiding by dharma and thinking of Krishna as we're engaging in those activities. So it's not an either-or choice. Inwardly, cultivating Krishna consciousness. Outwardly, living according to the, like you use the terms, you know, what's right. Supposing what I hear from people that are involved in the workplace, commonly there's projects, and as it gets closer to the project time, the heat ramps up. And then people are blaming each other for, you know, you're behind, you didn't do this right, and the blaming game.
Yes. How do you deal with that?
So you don't involve yourself in it. You stay focused on, you know, carrying out your duty as best you can. You remain calm. You don't get all worked up. You remain focused on carrying out the duty. One man was, long story, make it short, said, I really like this Bhagavad Gita discussion group. From the time I was a little boy, I was attracted, I had faith in the message of Bhagavad Gita. So wherever there was a Bhagavad Gita study program, I participated. To be honest with you, I never really understood Bhagavad Gita, but I understood it was good. Fast forward, you know, I lived my life this way, that way, the other way. I started coming to this discussion group in Bhagavad Gita. I just moved to the city and because my job. And so I, you know, I looked around, where is there a study group, Bhagavad Gita? So I came to this one. But my life started to change. And one of the things that's been a problem for me is I have a little anger problem. Not like outrageous, not like, you know, yelling and hitting people, but, you know, anger. I get tensed with anger. I didn't like it, so I tried anger management, and I tried this and that. But now, just from the few months that I've been participating in this, this anger thing is subsiding. And he gave the specific example of, for example, in the workplace, when it's project wrap-up time, people get into this blaming and criticizing and back room, and I'm thinking, just get the work done. Stay focused. Do your prescribed duty and think of Krishna. But so previously I just get really angry, not necessarily go storming around the office and yelling at people, why are you blaming each other? Get the work done. Just would get angry. But I'm not angry anymore. And the strength of that is purification that comes from hearing Krishna Katha, Krishna's teaching, assimilating it, hearing it properly, assimilating it properly, and becoming lifted and fixed in the position of being Krishna's servant in the contaminating atmosphere. It works. At least the potency is there, depending on how we apply ourselves. And so progressive Krishna consciousness happens that way. We're protected. We're lifted. And, you know, it keeps going. Lifted to Goloka Vrindavan. The requirement isn't you just, like, check out of your job because the atmosphere is too contaminating. That's not the program. You elevate your consciousness by hearing and chanting and applying those things that you've heard and the purification that you've acquired from chanting. Just cultivate. That's a life of devotion in an atmosphere that's polluted. Yeah.
Anger is one thing, and so when somebody criticizing, blaming, other than that, sometimes they try to take your things. So how, what will you, like, your job, your anything?
Krishna is your protector. That's what you do. If you're in an atmosphere where people are like that, you don't want to stay there.
Anything it can be.
I understand anything. I'm responding. It's a principle. It's not only, you know, your autobiographical experience. It's living entities in general, the different varieties of how attacks can come or unkindnesses can come. It's a harsh world in the human form and not outside the human form. So especially in the human form, there's the opportunity to take full shelter of Krishna, and Krishna protects his devotees to medium and even to extreme degrees. Prahlad and Maharaj Ambarish in extreme degrees. Life-threatening. Protected. Now, Jiva Goswami comments, sometimes, he gives the example of Maharaj Pariksit, sometimes a devotee doesn't exhibit that particular glory of the Supreme Lord, that his life was protected. His life wasn't protected. But the glory of Maharaj Ambarish, Maharaj Pariksit, was exhibited by his mind was not deviated. He went back to Godhead. He was relieved of the mortal coil and the implication of matter. Now, you know, the permanent solution to that harassment problem, the good fortune, ill fortune, kindness and meanness spirit that pervades the material world. We tolerate it and fix our mind on Krishna. Go forward in whatever the varied circumstance, trusting that Krishna is my protector. Read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Text Number 8. 10:14:8. And, you know, it's a homework assignment. I believe it's Tate Nukampam Susamik Shimano. It starts like that. You'll get some nice instruction. 10:14:8. And it starts T-A-T. Tat Te T-E. Tat Te Nukampam. Yes? Last question. Go ahead. You. Yes. Last question. Is it a good question? Oh, good. Okay.
We aspire to do this much of Krishna consciousness, but we tend to do only this much, and we push forward. And many times it happens, we do a lot of introspection. These things make sometimes stressful. So, how to make our life, Krishna conscious life, happy, more joyful,
and just taking the preamble of your question, how to be more joyful, have realistic expectations of what you're wishing to do or achieve, and leave the result up to Krishna. You know, a stressor is expectations that are unmet. So in life, have realistic expectations. And what a very realistic expectation is, Krishna is kind. Connect with the kindness of Krishna. Then you'll be de-stressed. You'll be peaceful. Your homework assignment is reading Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text 29. We discussed it last night in Baltimore.
It's the last verse of the...
Chapter 5.
I remember that verse. The Bhaktaram Gita of Sansarola of Mayaswara.
So are we done?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Prabhupada. Keep...